Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Okay, this is episode 252. Tons of crazy stuff going on in the news about a past Grand Master in Minnesota. If you don't know what I'm talking about, check out Chris Hodapp's blog. There's a lot going on in the nation right now, and people are on high alert, high tensions, there's high feelings. And so in the wake of all that, I just want to say, I hope you guys, whoever you are, whatever you're upset about, wherever your feelings lie, I hope that you all have some relief in your daily lives going forward. That aside, we've got a great show this week. I want to give a thanks to Brother Bill Hosler. Brother Bill and I were having a conversation, and then we recorded it, kinda. So without any further delay, we'll just go right into that. After that, we'll go into, we've got a piece by illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison in the Masonic Minute, and we've got a great book review by worshipful Brother Adam Thayer. So stick around.
No way. Points in, points out, George W. Washington, clandestine pancakes.
So Bill, did you know that the forget-me-not was in use during Nazi-era Germany to identify Freemasons walking the street who didn't want to get persecuted? I can't believe how amazing that is.
Yeah, you know, it's a great story, but it's really not true. I know, hard to believe, but
what?
It's just another one of those, it's another one of those Masonic urban legends that everybody think is actually true, but it's not. Basically, I read an article by Mark's worshipful brother, Brad Rickelman from Oklahoma, and him and his wife laid out this thing. They did a lot of extensive surveys, and basically it turns out in 1926, one of the Grand Lodges in Germany made up a pin, kind of like a Grand Master's pin, for the brethren to wear at their communication. And obviously, you know, Hitler didn't like Freemasons, so he banned it. And it really wasn't until after the war, I believe in 1948, when Brother Theodor Vogel, the first Grand Master of the United Grand Lodge of Germany, decided that it would, he went and found that it had this made up, you know, the forget-me-not pin made up, actually in the same factory and from the same dye as what they had in 1926. And he was hoping that it would, you know, be a substitute for square and compass and in more of a remembrance of the brethren who was persecuted during World War II. It was never meant to be. I mean, let's face it, Hitler, and according to the paper, Hitler outlawed all types of lapel pins and insignias that was from the National Socialist Party. So if they would have wore a forget-me-not pin, and, you know, obviously, I mean, let's face it, Masonic secrets are not that secret. Someone would have blabbed and the authorities would have known. So, I mean, obviously it would never have worked out. It was a beautiful idea by Brother Vogel to remember those brethren who had lost. But it is like every other thing that we tend to do, it took on a different meaning, and sadly it just wasn't true. It's a nice idea, but it isn't correct.
So, Bill, are you saying that when we get the forget-me-not lapel pin at Grand Lodge and we buy it for like $2.50, and that little story that's on it, it's just fake?
I don't want to say fake because it has a bad connotation, but I really think that, you know, it's like a lot of the Masonic history in the past, you know, well-meaning brother trying to build up something that is not.
Sure.
I mean, it's, you know, it was meant to be a thought for remember the people who was lost in World War II, not as and somebody attached a story to it that, and I think it's kind of like the Masonic telephone game, you
know. And he told two friends, and he told two friends, and he told two friends.
Exactly. I mean, sadly, I mean, it's a beautiful story, and when I first heard it, and I read the little card, I was touched. And it wasn't until I read that paper by Brother Rickelman that I realized, you know, that it was false, and it's a beautiful story, but it's just not true.
Incredible. You heard it here first, if you haven't read it already from the Oklahoma piece, that this pin is actually not exactly what it seems. But, you know, in a grander scale, it might actually be bigger now that we understand what it is and what it represents, even more than just brothers.
Honestly, almost like the symbology behind a broken collar. You know, it reminds us of a person who's passed, and whose time was taken from them or before it was supposed to be taken. And so it's almost, it's, I cherish it more like that, that it's more like something in remembrance of people who gave their lives for ideals.
I think that's eloquently put. You heard it here from worshipful brother Bill Hosler, who gave us your first installment of Masonic Myth. Busted.
And, you know, and yeah, and if the brethren have any ideas for other Masonic myths we can talk about, let us know, because, you know, there's only so many I know about. But it would be great to, you know, dispel more myths.
Let's talk about it. So if you shoot Bill an email at billhosler@midnightfreemasons.org, we might talk about it on the next episode. So get on it.
Let's bust some myths, and let's make Masonry and Masonic history great again.
All right, guys. Well, thanks, Bill, for coming on the show and giving us some light.
Well, thank you for having me on, Robert. It was a pleasure, and thank you so much for everything you do for the craft.
Oh, thank you, Brother Bill.
The Myths About Forget-Me-Not Flowers by Most Worshipful Bradley S. and Jean Rickelman. The blue delicate forget-me-not flower has a long history in German mythology, but its association with Masonry dates back less than 100 years to the time of the persecution of Freemasons in Nazi Germany. Disentangling the myth from reality includes reviewing stories about the origin of its name and different meanings, including love, remembrance, and a symbol of a Freemason resistance to Nazi oppression. Enduring love. The majority of the folklore surrounding the meaning of the flower comes from Germany. One German folk story recounts how, after God named all of the plants, a tiny unnamed one cried out, "Forget me not, O Lord," prompting God to reply, "That shall be your name." Several other Germanic stories feature medieval knights who are either in love or yearning for love. A common myth related to the origin of these flowers recounts how once upon a time there was a German knight who wanted to express his love towards his beloved by giving her some blue flowers. While searching for the flowers, he found them along the banks of the Danube River. As he picked some of the flowers, the weight of his armor caused him to fall into the river. As he was drowning, he threw the bouquet to his loved. As he shouted, "Forget me not," women began wearing the forget me not as a sign of faithfulness and enduring love. Fidelity. The decision to adapt the blue forget-me-not in lieu of the square and compass by Nazi-era Freemasons is lost to the mists of time. It is true that the Grand Lodge, Zur Sonn, or Bayreuth, Germany, commissioned a forget-me-not pin in 1926 as a gift for delegates attending the annual meeting. The pins were manufactured in a factory in Selb, a small town close to Bayreuth. In March of 1938, the Nazis selected a forget-me-not pin as a token of recognition for those persons who made a donation during the annual Winterhilfs work, an annual charitable solicitation that actually went toward funding rearmament. Ironically, the pin was manufactured in the same Selb factory using the same molds it did in 1926 for the Grand Lodge Zur Sonn. Different pins were selected for each Winterhilfs work, and the astonishing coincidence of the forget-me-not being selected to identify those who had already contributed in its keeping with German folklore about the forget-me-not flower association with remembering those less fortunate. However, given it was a criminal offense to wear a pin that did not originate with Nazi Party, it is highly unlikely that anyone dared to wear the pin beyond the month of the annual Winterhilfs work. Nevertheless, the belief persisted that Freemasons began wearing the forget-me-not since they were forbidden to display the square and compass. However, there is no record of the pin or the flower ever having been worn in concentration camps. This makes sense since the clothing in concentration camps was minimal and any personal adornment, including wearing jewelry or any ornamentation, was punishable by death. After World War II ended, Grand Master Dr. Theodor Vogel, who later became Grand Master of the United Lodges of Germany, installed a new lodge at Selb in 1948. Remembering the forget-me-not pin distributed by the Grand Lodge Zur Sonn in 1926, Grand Master Vogel went in search of the factory. By another extraordinary coincidence, the factory and the mold survived the war. Grand Master Vogel commissioned the pins to be made again and begin to distribute them as a token of friendship. When he addressed the Conference of Grand Masters in Washington, D.C. in February of 1953, he hoped the forget-me-not could be used as an interchangeable symbol with the ideals of Freemasonry and a Germany now free of Nazi oppression. It also was a way to remember those Masons who were victimized by the Nazi regime. Remembrance. The forget-me-not as a symbol of remembrance flourished in England and Canada after World War II. In Newfoundland, the forget-me-not was adopted as a symbol of remembrance for those who had died in war. In English Freemasonry, it is more commonly now worn to remember those who have died as a symbol that though someone may be gone, they are not forgotten. In 2013, Lady's Pin, which features the forget-me-not, is meant to symbolize three feminine virtues, enduring love, faithfulness, and remembrance. By wearing the pin, we are pledging our fidelity and love to our Masonic family, honoring our veterans, and remembering those in our Masonic family who are no longer with us.
So that's the piece. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed the preliminary conversation I had with Brother Bill about the myth. And as with all research papers, of course, I'm not saying this is absolutely true, everything in it, but it seems that this past Grandmaster did his research. And I don't think a past Grandmaster is going to put his name necessarily on something that doesn't have a lot of valid points behind it. He probably did his great research and it sounds great. So if you have any more Masonic myths, go ahead and shoot them on over to Bill and we can record another segment of Masonic myths. And this kind of was a launching from the previous episode in which we dispelled many myths. People really liked that episode. They thought it was great and they wanted more. So I think the next time we may talk about some interesting things like the Gettysburg statue, a friend to a friend, the myth behind that. Of course, the many, many pieces of evidence contrary to that story are outlined by Michael Halloran, who wrote The Better Angels of Our Nature, Freemasonry in the Civil War. So check that book out if you get a chance. As for right now, we're going to go right into the Masonic Minute with illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison.
I am aware that many of our listeners and viewers are located in the Scottish Rite's northern jurisdiction. As such, they may not be aware of or familiar with the designation unique to the southern jurisdiction, Knight Commander of the Court of Honor. Like the 33rd degree, KCCH, as it is known, is an honor which the Supreme Council bestows on deserving brethren. It is, however, not a degree. Rather, it is a rank and designation. A brother may not request the KCCH honor and, if he does so, Southern jurisdiction rules stipulate automatic refusal. In order to receive the designation, a brother must have been a 32nd degree Mason for a minimum of 46 months, but typically the period is much longer. The Executive Committee of the Valley nominates candidates for the honor. In order to be nominated, a brother must be deemed to have given exceptional service to the Rite, Freemasonry, or his community based on principles taught in the Scottish Rite degrees. Since KCCH is not a degree, the ceremony is an investiture, not an initiation. As such, it is open to the public. Candidates view the proceedings from front row seats as 17 officers instruct an exemplar in the meaning of the teachings, symbolism, and regalia of the Court of Honor. Of the officers, only the Sovereign Grand Commander is a 33rd degree Mason. The remainder are Knights Commander of the Court of Honor. The most distinctive apparel of the KCCH Mason is his red cap. It is a symbol of the nobility of the soul, which is the parent of all knightly virtues. It replaces the black cap he earned upon becoming a 32nd degree Mason, and it is the cap he wears to Valley meetings. In the Southern jurisdiction, a brother must receive the KCCH honor and hold it for no less than 46 months before becoming eligible for the 33rd degree. During the ceremony, however, the KCCH candidate specifically hears the admonition that the KCCH does not represent a half degree, nor does it assure advancement to the 33rd degree. If you do not, in future years, receive the last degree, he is instructed, remember that you have been singularly honored in this investiture by the Supreme Council, and that it is a solemn duty to be true, loyal, and devoted to the rite. Upon his investiture, John Doe, 32nd degree, becomes John Doe, 32nd degree KCCH, or simply John Doe, KCCH. In the event he receives the 33rd degree, he will be designated John Doe, 33rd degree, dropping the KCCH initials because it is understood all 33rd degree Inspectors General Honorary are also KCCH. Selection for the KCCH designation is strictly limited, and a maximum of half of all KCCH brothers advance to the 33rd degree. The Supreme Council, at the insistence of Grand Commander Albert Pike, created the KCCH rank on May 5, 1870. Its purpose was and remains to honor those brethren who have shown significant achievement without diluting the 33rd degree by increasing its number of chosen members. It is in and of itself one of the greatest honors in the Southern jurisdiction to hear the Sovereign Grand Commander say at the investiture's culmination, "I dub and create thee a Knight Commander of the Court of Honor, and may our Father in Heaven make thee a good knight in the service of our fellow men." As an epilogue, I should say, a few years ago when I wrote an article about the KCCH for the Midnight Freemasons blog, we had a bit of a dust-up with one reader in particular, insisting the ceremony is not public. I subsequently checked with my own valley's personal representative and SGIG and found that, in my jurisdiction at least, the ceremony is entirely open. It is, in fact, an auspicious affair we look forward to every other year. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right, many thanks to illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison for his enlightening work here on the podcast with the Masonic Minute. His media computer took a massive crash, so there is no video to accompany it this time. I know it's a bummer. We may be able to put something together. I may be able to put something together and toss it up on the website, on the YouTube channel rather. And if you really like these segments, please head on over to Amazon.com and pick up one of Steve's books. Give it a rating, and I really appreciate that in advance. So let's check out Worshipful Brother Adam Thayer, who wrote a book review, and he actually asked me, is this book review okay? And I had a feeling that maybe there was a problem with the book, and he didn't know if the book review would be appropriate. But we are an unbiased source. No Grand Lodge, no person pays us to review things, so you're getting kind of honest feedback. And so I want you to remember that in everything that we do, nobody's paying us to review anything. So if we say something is great, it's because we think it's great. If it's not so great, you know, we're going to be the same. And I think his book review will talk for itself. So here we go.
Welcome back to From the Library, where we review and discuss upcoming Masonic books. Today we are reading A Traditional Observance Lodge, One Mason's Journey to Fulfillment by Brother Cliff Porter. This book was originally released in 2013 and is readily available in both print and digital formats. Reviewing books can be a rather difficult task, made all the more difficult when you are reviewing the work of a brother. I believe strongly against recommending any work that I don't feel is worthy. However, I also feel compassion to the poor man who has poured his effort into writing and cannot bring myself to say, this isn't good enough. It takes a significant amount of bravery to put your thoughts and words into the public for review, and I applaud anyone who has undertaken writing in a serious manner. This is not a pointless digression, but the main crux of my feelings towards this book, allow me to explain. This book is intended to explain how the traditional observance lodge can, in some instances, save not only a dying lodge, but reinvigorate the craft as a whole. For those who are unaware, traditional observance is a movement first started by the Masonic Restoration Foundation, aimed at correcting the path of Freemasonry by returning the dignity and solemnity of our ceremonies, improving the lodge experience, and providing greater fellowship among brothers. This presents the first issue that the reader will encounter. Is traditional observance truly right for you? Brother Porter does a very good job presenting the positive aspects of the movement and is an excellent cheerleader for it. However, there are some downsides that are entirely glossed over throughout the text. For the movement to be taken seriously, both the pros and the cons need to be presented and thoroughly explored. Perhaps a traditional observance lodge is right for you, perhaps it isn't. But you'll never be able to make an informed decision relying entirely on this book. I can't fault Brother Porter for this, as it was never his intention to write such a detailed examination, but it is disappointing nonetheless. After the portion of the book that explains why you should consider a traditional observance lodge, there is a reasonably thorough discussion of how to set up a new lodge, and how to convert an existing lodge to the traditional observance model. This section makes the whole book a must-have for anyone looking for ways to improve their lodge, as many of the ideas presented can be used in your existing lodge without fully converting to the traditional observance model. I know I will be looking for ways to implement these ideas in the lodges I'm active in, and this is a fantastic resource for you to have at your disposal. The second issue with the book, and the one that I have a much more difficult time dismissing, is the extensive typos and grammatical errors throughout the text. The majority of this book is spent in pushing the idea of quality in our lodges, which is a fantastic idea, and it makes it all the more puzzling that the quality of writing wasn't up to the quality of the concepts. Very rarely was there an entire page without multiple errors, and many of them were errors that should have been caught by running a simple spelling and grammar check available in any modern text editing software. It was more than just distracting. It made the entire text an exercise in frustration to read. It is my ardent hope that Brother Porter releases a second edition of this book, with a more thorough examination of the pros and cons of the traditional observance model, more ideas that you can bring to improve your lodge, and most importantly, an editor who can improve the readability of the text. Until then, if you purchase this book, please be aware of the issues up front, as it will save you endless amounts of frustration. As always, for more information regarding the book we've reviewed today, please see the show notes section. For the Whence Came You podcast, I'm Adam Thayer, and I'm heading back to the library.
Well, there you have it. Links to everything in this week's show is, of course, going to be in the show notes. I really appreciate you guys all who are listening to the show. I recently got an email from a brother who lives in Japan who came over here for a wedding, and he visited the Guthrie Scottish Rite Temple, and he loved it, and he was telling me about how amazing it was. So, brother, if you are listening to this program, I have to say a sincere thank you, and it was just mind-blowing. It was crazy to get an email from somebody in Japan who is a potential candidate. And, of course, we will help you every way we can to get you in touch with a local lodge in your area so that you can join this great group of men in this great fraternity. If you all enjoy this program, please rate it on iTunes. Please support the show through any number of ways that you can do that. If you go to wcypodcast.com, of course, there is the support the show link. So if you click support the show, there's a few links. There's for Onnit Labs, there's Alpha Brain Instant or Alpha Brain or Hemp Force Protein or any of these things. If you click on these links, that's how they know that you came to them through us. So you got to go to our website, click the links, then do your shopping, then use the promo code WCY and at checkout. So if you do that, you'll get 10% off. It's kind of a cool thanks to be able to do that. And they send a little bit back to the show to keep the lights on. In addition, you can donate to the show via PayPal. It helps keep the lights on, of course. All donations go right back into the show. So, for instance, the audio quality of the paper that we read this week was a little bit different, and that's because I actually recorded it in my car of all places with a really nice microphone that I purchased that works with my phone. So it's like mobile podcasting. And of course, I'm still working out how to make that sound the best, but it is like the best podcasting mic you can get for a mobile device. So with that, I'll be able to go to Grand Lodge and do interviews at Grand Lodge and things of that nature. So that audio quality may not have sounded the greatest, but it's a whole lot better than if I had just recorded it with my phone. So please, every dollar helps, whether it's 50 cents or a buck or whatever. You can even set up monthly recurring payments. We've got some brothers who do that, and thank you so much for that. In addition, you can go to freemasonryart.com and go check out Brother Juan Sepulveda's amazing artwork and use the promo code WCY, again, 10% off. And most recently, Banker's Best Beard and Skincare. This is a weird kind of category for a Mason maybe to get into, but here's the deal, is that a Mason owns this business, and he has said that if you use the promo code BBWCY357, you'll get actually 20% off of your orders. And I actually use the beard oils. They're really nice. They smell great. My wife loves them. So check it out. We've got an exclusive product coming from Banker's Best. We're going to offer, you heard it here right now. This is it. It's the big reveal. We're going to offer an exclusive beard oil, King Solomon's Reserve, made with scents that are relative to the region of the Middle East there. It's going to be really cool. I hope you guys really enjoy it. And when we come out with it, there's going to be a certain way that you get it. So stay tuned for more details on that. In addition, one of the last way to support this program is through buying a lapel pin with the WCY exclusive lapel pin. Nobody else has this. It's totally different than anything you've ever seen. And that's because it's an exclusive design that we took from a Masonic education reference and we've put our own spin on it. And the colors and the symbolism and everything is all there. I mean, if you ever want an explanation of it, give me a holler, but you got to buy one first. So check it out. The pins are 10 bucks, $2 to ship anywhere in the world. And that's that. If you like Masonic podcasts, please keep coming back and check out TMR, the Masonic Roundtable, going live every Tuesday at 10/9 Central. If you like other Masonic podcasts, check out a website kind of put together. It's an aggregate. It's called MasonicPodcastNetwork.com. So if you go there, you'll see a bunch of Masonic podcasts, some of which are still there, some of which are not. I do have to update that. Please check out our new service, WCY Media. It's launched. It's a consulting source on how to publish podcasts or media of all sorts for Masons or the occult. We do help everybody who comes to us, and if you're a brother of this show, of course, we do have to charge a little bit to keep the lights on there and for the time that we spend getting you up and running. But for the most part, it's super cheap. You get to get a brother price, you know what I'm saying? So check that out. In addition to all of that, the Midnight Freemasons. I mention it every week because I'm so proud of it. The Midnight Freemasons, you may have noticed, we got a little bit of a tweak on the fonts and some of the colors and things, and I think it pops even better than ever now. So please check out themidnightfreemasons.org 3 times a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. We got a great series going on right now with Brother James E. Fry, The Individuation of the Craft. It kind of focuses on Carl Jung's take on certain psychological elements. So again, check all that out. That's it for this week. Stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.